From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and we deal with mental health issues every week on this show from a holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit. And my philosophy and approach, as many others, is unless there is an effort to raise one's consciousness about the interaction and the interconnectedness of both of all the body, the mind, and the spirit in the therapeutic process, then one won't find a sense of balance one is really coming into therapy to achieve. So I am one of those therapists that have no problem talking about spirituality or religion in the context of the healing process and actually emphasize it in the work with my clients and in my own life, which actually is a perfect leap into today's show. Some of you may have seen, or most of you may have heard of, a film that is part story, part documentary called What the Bleep Do We Know? And that is what we're going to be talking about today, and I'll be introducing to you in a few minutes the director and director of photography for that film, Mark Vicente. But first I want to read you a little quote from the LA Times from Thursday, March 10th. And the headline is, Physicist Wins Spirituality Award. Charles Townes, the UC Berkeley professor who shared the 1964 Nobel Prize in Physics for his work in quantum electronics, and then startled the scientific world by suggesting that religion and science were converging, was awarded the $1.5 million Templeton Prize on Wednesday for progress in spiritual knowledge. The co-inventor of the laser, Townes, who's now 89 years old, said no greater question faced humankind than discovering the purpose and meaning of life and why there was something rather than nothing in the cosmos. He also was quoted as saying, if you look at what religion is all about, it's trying to understand the purpose and meaning of our universe, he said in a telephone interview from New York this week. Quote, science tries to understand function and structure. If there is any meaning, structure will have a lot to do with any meaning. In the long run, they must come together. Townes said that it was extremely unlikely that the laws of physics that led to life on Earth were accidental. So here you have a Nobel Prize-winning physicist winning an award on spirituality. A quote from Winston Churchill, which I really like, says that man will occasionally stumble over the truth, but usually manages to pick himself up, walk over it or around it, and carry on. And the film, What the Bleep Do We Know, I saw when I viewed it, was an effort to keep us from walking over or around our own personal truths. And you would think that a film that combines quantum physics with existential questions of life and existence and religion and spirituality would be something most people would stay away from, but in reality, it's gotten a lot of buzz and a lot of attention, not just at festivals, but it's also been doing very well at the box office. So with that being said, I'd like to introduce my guest today. As I said before, his name is Mark Vicente. He is the director of the film and the director of photography. And the best way I can introduce him is a quote from the website about the filmmakers. Mark Vicente knew from a young age that media and motion pictures in particular are the most powerful way to reach people. I always pondered the question, he said, what if this powerful form was used to uplift people rather than keep them trapped in the corporate and religious food chain, merely consuming products and dogma without the knowledge to create life on their own terms. He arrived on the planet as a Christian, performed a brief stint as a New Ager until he realized that the latter was, quote, a bit like being a Democrat, well-intentioned, politically correct, but lacking balls. His dream drew him from his native South Africa to California, where he became aware of Ramses' work in the early 90s and has been a student of Ramses' School of Enlightenment since. Mark, I really am excited that you're here with us today, and I welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Stuart. And by the way, you make me sound really, really smart.
Well, it doesn't take a dummy to produce and direct this film like you have been involved with. How did you get involved in this film?
Well, we started about 4 years ago. William Arntz, who was the producer and financier of the film, and I were at a Ramsa event together. And, you know, Ramsa teaches a great deal about quantum mechanics and, you know, what that has to do with our life, our daily life. We sort of turned to each other and thought, you know, these ideas would make a really fabulous film, because we knew that these ideas were available in books. They were available in certain schools of thought, in certain, perhaps, universities. But most people didn't have access to it because you're not likely to turn on the news and learn about these things. You're not likely to open the newspaper or open a magazine. And so what we wanted to do was put it out sort of in the popular media and have people look at information that is available, but it's probably generally hard for them to find because of, quite frankly, the suppression of some of this material, you know, in the general media. So that was how it started. It started with this idea, let's get these ideas of science out there. Let's have people look at them and then reflect on, does this have any meaning for them? And get them to ask greater questions.
Well, it's, to me, it was more than that. It wasn't just taking the material. It was actually making it entertaining and palatable and understandable. And when you talk about, when you hear the word quantum mechanics and quantum physics, most people, I mean, including me, you know, go, it's like, that's more than I can handle. But you brought it down to a place, including interviews with physicists and scientists and stuff, that actually, first of all, humanized them, and second of all, brought it down to a common denominator that everyone could understand, especially through the weaving of the storyline with Marley Matlin's character.
Right. I think we were intensely aware that it's so easy to nerd out on this kind of material and on science, and we wanted to make sure that we could include as many people as possible. The film is made in quite a fast style, especially the beginning, because we're aware just about everybody we know in the society has ADD. It's not just the kids, it's, you know,
including me.
Well. Yeah. we live in 30-second consciousness. People, you know, take everything in packets of a 30-second commercial or a 3-minute song. We were aware of that, so we wanted to stylistically keep it pacey and keep it entertaining. We're also aware that with this very, very intense material, it's important to make people laugh. You know, so much of the second act of the film is, you know, we think very funny, because we're having people look at some difficult places inside themselves and be honest about who they really are. And we realize the only way we'll do that is by laughter. We knew that laughter would create sort of a neuroplasticity in their brain, and they would be more open to learning. And studies have shown that, you know, learning and laughter work very, very well together.
Well, we're going to be talking a lot more about, I'm coming from a psychologist or a psychotherapist perspective, but before we even continue, I want to let my listeners know that we have something special going on the show today. The producers actually sent me 5 copies. The DVD is actually coming out, I think, on Tuesday, March 15th, and you can get a free one to the first 5 callers today. Not just with calling to say hello. I want you to have a question for Mark and myself. If you call in and have a question for us about the film or about the topic, the first 5 callers will be sent a free copy of the DVD. So I'm reminding my listeners who are listening on the air in the Phoenix area or via the Internet, the phone number is 480-949-1310. 480-949-1310. So feel free to call in, and we'll be getting your name and address so that we can mail that DVD to you. So the first 5 callers, I got 5 copies of it. Now, getting back to the issue of entertainment and laughter, some of the scenes really were quite quite hysterical. The visuals actually were amazing. The end, often humorous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stylized aspect of the film itself, like you talked about, the ADD, people have this small attention span, but it was very, I don't know what the word I'm looking for.
Some slapstick sometimes?
Well, sometimes slapstick, but
yeah.
Also engaging. That's
yeah.
the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
The visuals were so engaging. And, you know, like even with the little boy at the beginning, you know, and people haven't seen it. I'm trying not to give away too much. But
yes.
As she encounters that little boy on the basketball court, you know, here you have out of the mouths of babes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, here was this little boy with this intense amount of wisdom teaching mm-hmm. the adult.
You know, the visuals were because we're well aware that you can't just, you know, tell somebody something in an auditory way. We understood that you have to reinforce those ideas visually as well. And what we wanted people to do is to hear the idea, see the idea, hear the idea again, see another version of the idea, so that they can start to build in their mind a greater model of possibility for themselves. We discuss in this film that you really can't experience what you don't know, because you don't have the neurology, you don't have the neural net to have that experience if you've never heard about it. So what we wanted to do is give people these experiences and give it to them in sometimes visually spectacular ways, so that they walk away and go, oh my God, you know, I've never thought about what the inside of my brain looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I've never thought about thinking. Now I'm flying through these neurons, and I'm seeing this idea of associative memory, how I associate ideas together, which is why, you know, when people have thoughts, and you know this very well, they have a thought, and suddenly they trail down this long road of different thoughts, and they wonder, how did I get there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we show them inside the brain how they get there. We use the example of, you know, how people have wired love together with perhaps disappointment, so every time they get in a relationship, because they have become hardwired in that way, every relationship ends the same way, or every job ends the same way.
Mm-hmm.
We have them look inside the brain, and we start to talk to them about the science of change and the science of possibility. And the idea is that, you know, many years ago, neuroscientists said that, you know, people were hardwired. And, of course, recently they said, you know what, we made a mistake. They're not, even as adults, we can make changes. And they can now show very specifically in the brain that when you change your thinking, the neurons actually disconnect from certain places and reconnect in other places. So it's not just children that can do this. And the reason it's so important for us to show people these ideas is because it gives people hope. Because we find, and my opinion is, there's not a lot of hope in the world right now. And if you can show people that change is possible and show them the biology of how that works, it's very important. So time and time again, we're using visuals to stimulate people's imagination in terms of what's possible. You mentioned the basketball court. The little kid, Reggie, who is this mysterious Yoda-like character
mm-hmm.
whom the Marnie Matlin character interacts with. And one of the ideas in quantum mechanics, quantum physics, I should probably not use that word because I know it sounds really dreary, but one of the ideas is that everything is a smear of possibilities. It all exists in multiple positions in time and space until you look at it. The moment you look at it, you collapse reality into a single idea, a single concept. And so in the film, we thought, okay, how do we explain that? So when she turns away from the little kid who's got a basketball, there's hundreds of basketballs everywhere, and he's aware of them all.
Mm-hmm.
And when she turns away, she's not aware that all of them are there. When she turns around, suddenly all of those hundreds of basketballs collapse into one, which is what scientists term the collapse of the wave function.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes that happen is the observer. And what most scientists don't talk about, and what is so important, is that that observer is every single human being.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important for us, science, because what we feel it does is it gives back to every individual the idea of divinity, the idea that science is supporting the notion that we have everything to do with our reality, and that our observation of our reality is what is creating and collapsing that reality into being what it is. Science doesn't really support, the advanced sciences don't really support the idea that there's some, you know, old guy with a white beard on a cloud making our decisions. It's now supporting the idea that every one of us is creating reality
mm-hmm.
based on this thing called the collapse of the wave function.
Stuart.
Well, it's another way that a lot of my metaphysical teachers, you know, thought is creative.
Yes.
And everything is perception. And, you know, our reality is based on our perception, and our perception is based on our history and our programming.
Right.
And I have many clients that, you know, in fact, I had one this week. He came in for his first session, and he's been in therapy before, and I could tell that he wanted to change, but there was a belief that he couldn't.
Right.
And as long as you hold on to the belief that change is not possible, change will not be possible.
Absolutely.
And so the whole point of getting him or any client or any individual, whether you're in therapy or just, you know, going through your life's journey, the more you start taking in those little tastes and those little tidbits of the possibility of change, the more you have that little miracle that all of a sudden a light goes off over one thing, it
right.
starts a chain reaction of other things that make the possibility of change more available and more conscious.
Right.
And I believe that's what you're describing as quantum physics.
Absolutely. You know, it's so interesting. We are so powerful that we manifest our self-fulfilling prophecies about who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so the challenge is, well, if I can only experience what I know, how do I experience something greater? And, of course, the answer is you have to have greater knowledge that you get to look at, get to study, and get to reflect on.
Mm-hmm.
A great example in my life is I never really had any good father figures in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain age in my 20s, I recognized that, and I realized that all I was going to do was I was going to repeat the patterns of my fathers who were not very good male role models.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me, you know, the only way I'm going to break this, because I'm going to repeat it exactly the way they did, is to go and search out greater models for what a good man or a great man could be, you know, or a great father. And in doing that, I found I was finally able to incorporate new ideas and then start living those new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can now say with great confidence, I'm very different from the male role models in my life.
Stuart?
Very different.
Stuart.
It's really funny you're saying this because I was just putting together a workshop for a thing called the California Men's Gathering, which is at the end of May, and they've asked me to do a workshop about this very thing. And that process was exactly what I wrote down to have them do.
Draw on characters
in history, fiction, and in their own life
right.
that they hold out qualities that they really strive for as male role models and to integrate them as if they were them.
Right.
And to embrace them. That sounds very much like what you
very cool.
Describing.
Very cool.
So it's like
Stuart, it's Robert back at the KXAM studios. We do have a couple of callers waiting for you.
Okay. Who's the first one?
The first one's Jack.
Jack from where?
From Mesa, I believe she's calling from.
Jackie on the line?
Hi, I'm from Scottsdale.
Scottsdale.
Thank you so much for your movie. I've seen it four times. And
excellent.
Each time I've gotten something else from it. It's just amazing. And I've told so many people about it, and the ones that have gotten back to me are just like, wow.
Thank you for doing that.
My question is it, I understand that if you're one way, I mean, or what I got out of it was, all you have to do is tell yourself that, you know, I don't hate you, I love you, da-da-da-da-da, but then when it comes up to me, I can do that, but then I revert back to these ways when I think of something I've done in my past, and it was crappy, and I say, oh, what a creep you were, kind of like that. So how do you make yourself believe these things?
That is a really good question. I mean, I think that it's really important that a person have in their life some kind of spiritual practice that they can do that can move themselves out of their ordinary mind. If you stay in the box of who you are and you try and convince yourself that you are this different person, all you are doing basically is doing an affirmation. You're using positive thinking. And you'll remember in the film that Michal Edvard said, positive thinking is all very good and well, but if it just covers a morass of negative thinking, all that will happen is you will go back and become that old person. One of the things about traditional therapy, and I'm not talking about what Stuart does, but traditional therapy tends to just move furniture around in the same box of humanity that we live in already. It is very important, and this is the work that I do at the school that I attend, you know, we move into a trance state where we are imaging an idea of who we are, not hoping that we'll become, but like a child, becoming the idea, but doing it in a trance state and moving out of the realm of who we are. You cannot wish and hope to become these things and still hold on to who you are. Most of us, you know, we say we want things. We say, I want to be happy, I want to be wealthy, I want to be whatever. But, you know, we tend to be more addicted to certain things that we say we don't want. We tend to be more addicted to being victims. Certain people that say to me, well, I just want to be happy, and I would say to them, great, you need to give up victimization. That's all you need to do. Becoming happy isn't something you have to become. It's waiting for you the minute you give up being a victim. And then, of course, they would say, well, I'm not a victim. Then you say, great, well, how about this situation? Any place that you argue for your limitations, you are addicted to that, and the reason you don't have what you want, of course, is because you're more focused on being that thing, you know, be it angry, be it being a victim, whatever it is. So I think it's really important that you have some kind of practice where you can become the idea of what you want to be, not by hoping, but actually becoming. And you can't just do it in what I would call an ordinary state of mind where you're just using cognitive thinking and thinking your way into it. You can't think your way into becoming that idea with the same mind that created your problem. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yes, it does. And are you sort of suggesting like meditation?
I could be suggesting meditation. Well, you know, the practice that I do is meditation, and yet it's not. It is focus. So what we do in my practice, the school I go to at Rampa School, is we're moving energy up the body into the brain until we hit that altered state of consciousness. And we are using force and will, and I don't mean by force something that's harsh, but using will, we are proclaiming, perhaps vocally, perhaps in our mind, what it is we want to become. We create beautiful symbols that we put on cards and that we model an image. Because remember, the brain doesn't actually think in words. It thinks in pictures. One of the great things you could do if you wanted to is to draw beautiful symbols of what it is that you want to become. And then remember, when the opposite of that comes up, when the limitations come up, don't negotiate with them. A great example is, you know, people that have miraculous healings, people that have cancer, people that have whatever it is, that have suddenly, in a moment, changed their life. They do that because they do not negotiate with the illness anymore. There comes a moment where they wake up one morning and they say, you know what, I've absolutely had it. And there's scientific biological proof of what is occurring. There's these peptides that get released called, I think, cytokines that Candace Pert has done research on. There's this massive force of will that this person who is dying undergoes, and their body's flooded with these neuropeptides, and suddenly within 24 hours they are healed. People call it a miracle. It is absolute will. It takes that kind of determination. You can't go negotiate. I'm sounding like a therapist right now. But
you're doing fine. You
remember?
Understanding more. I mean, I've sort of become aware of the different parts of things that you're talking about. Like, I've seen people that have had, you know, so to speak, miracle healings and stuff. And now I'm coming to understand that that's got to be energy. The energy has changed. Maybe the blockage there now is gone.
Yeah, you got to remember, of course, you know, we're the one that put the block there.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, we're the one that put the block there. So it requires will. It requires decision. You know, we can go to therapy for years, and once again, I want to distinguish between the kind of therapy that Stuart does and what I call traditional therapy. Traditional therapy, you can go to therapy for years. And you know what? Sometimes it's just a decision. When do you get tired of being the person you are? The minute you get tired and the minute you get bored, that's when you can make a change. But until you're tired and bored of it, people will tend to want to just repeat the same thing. I mean, doing the same thing every day is so absolutely boring. I can't even imagine living like that. You know, my teacher happens to tell us, you know what, you should become somebody different every year. My God, move on.
Yeah.
Let go of all those things that we keep holding on to. But we have this idea that there's this part of us that's holding on that's not us. It's us. We're insisting on being that person that we don't want to be, and yet we insist on being it every day. Does that make sense?
Well, speaking
yes,
of
does.
Moving on, I want to make sure we get to the other callers. Ma'am, if you'll hold on, my engineer will get your name and address so we can get that DVD out to you, and thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you so much for having this program, and I've listened to you for many months now.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to hear that. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Okay, Rob.
Okay, we're going to have Dawn from Mesa on the phone for us.
You there?
I'm here.
Thank you for listening. What's your question for Mark?
I think it was just about answered in the last by the last caller, but I was trying to find out what I can do day to day to stay on track and actually implement all these things that I believe, and oftentimes at the same and sometimes doubt.
Doubt, yeah. You know, doubt is an interesting one. I've thought a lot about doubt. You know, doubt protects us from change. You know, we have this idea of what we want to become. Perhaps we've read a book. Perhaps we've seen this film. Perhaps we've seen another film. Perhaps we've had some mystical experience in the wilderness that is so profound. And the thing about those experiences is, the truth is, they tend to be very threatening to the status quo of who we are. And so what we sometimes do, very purposefully but without realizing it, is we use doubt to destroy the beautiful idea because it's too threatening. The way to stay on track, really, and I know this sounds terribly simple, is to decide to do it, is to decide not to negotiate with doubt. The body, the brain is designed, the cortex of the brain, is designed to keep the body safe from everything. These ideas that we look at that we find so marvelous, sometimes we tend to think they might be dangerous to us, and so the brain's job is to protect the body. When you're looking at an unknown idea, the brain sends this alert signal like, uh-oh, it's unknown, we don't know what's going to happen, we could get hurt, and we block it. And doubt is a weapon that we as a personality use to keep ourselves safe. So it's very important to reframe what doubt is. You know, I think in the end, I mean, there's so many different spiritual practices, but I think that there is something remarkable about nature, and there's a lot to be learned about nature and the order of nature. I find that when we spend more time in nature, we develop a clarity that we may not develop so much in social groups and social consciousness. And I just have to say something that's just slightly political as well. The best way to stay on track is turn television off, which you may or may not do, I'm not sure. Turn off the trash. Turn off the programming. We live in a society in America where we are programmed not to think. We are programmed not to think of ourselves as divine. We're programmed to think that we need something. We're programmed to think we need a product. It's very important to shut out those constant messages that do not help us. So in the end, staying on track is recognizing that voice that says, oh, I don't think it's possible. The only way to combat the voice that doesn't think it's possible is to go and do the study and the research of extraordinary things that people have done and to see, is there a way to scientifically back that up? Because what we do then is we develop ammunition against the doubt inside ourselves. When we develop ammunition and then we go out and we try an idea, like whatever idea it is, if you go and exercise that idea and you find that you succeed, that is another piece of ammunition you have in your arsenal to tell you, you know what, I did this thing here. Now what am I capable of doing? You know, for instance, if you could precognitively know what's about to happen, or you know the thoughts of somebody, you know, you practice some little thing and you succeed, that's monumental. I mean, everybody's capable of it. We're just told we are. And then you say, wow, if I can do that, what can I not do? So I think it's important, though, in the end to remember doubt is just, you know, it's a trick that the personality plays with us. And we think it's very real. And the problem is we listen to it. And we all have that voice inside of us. And it's related to low self-esteem and all kinds of things. It's important to remember that voice sometimes is just trying to keep us safe from the unknown. And yet, the remarkable experiences that we want are in the unknown. They are not in what we know. Because if they were in what we knew and what we know, we wouldn't be so unhappy and searching for something greater. I'm not suggesting that you're unhappy. I'm just suggesting that if you're searching for more, that means that what is in your box of possibilities right now is not satisfying to you.
That makes a lot of sense.
Thank you for calling in. Have you listened to the show before?
Yes, I have.
Ah, it's so glad to hear that. Okay. Thanks for calling, and stay on the line so Rob can get your name and address so we can get that DVD out to you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. We have another caller, Rob?
Yes, we have Mark from Scottsdale.
Mark from Scottsdale, you are there? Mark?
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, hello? Mark. How are you doing?
Good. How are you? I'm first-time caller, first-time listener.
Great. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I missed a little bit of your introduction, but and there's a million questions to ask. So
well, you get one.
All right. It has to do with the neurotransmitters that you were discussing earlier.
Yes.
So as you evolve, if I understand it, as you make these changes, the, what are they called, neural pathways?
Yes.
Okay, they then, these thoughts go a different way. I'm probably oversimplifying and don't understand it well. I guess what I'm wondering is, once you've made a change or continue to affect a change, do the old ways then, are they resistant? Do they become strong and resistant so that the new way of thinking or acting would become natural?
Does that make sense? I think I understand your question, and we address it to some extent in the film, but let me try and repeat it. Is when you keep repeating a new way of being or a new idea, you reinforce new neural pathways as opposed to the old ones. And when you're no longer reinforcing the old ones, you're no longer having nerve growth factor in that area. So the neurons begin to detach. It's not as simple as this, but let me just try and simplify it. Neuropeptides are these beautiful chemicals in the body. We make, you know, all kinds of neuropeptides, which are amazing part of the hormonal systems. When you hold a new idea, you release those neuropeptides into the body the same way as if you're constantly angry or constantly, you know, upset or whatever it is. Those are the neuropeptides that get released into the body and start breaking down the cells through time. When you hold a new idea, you release different kinds of neuropeptides. It's not as simple as saying that there's a specific neuropeptide for this specific feeling. There are groups of emotions that are related to neuropeptides. So yes, when you reinforce through repetition an idea, you will reinforce the new idea in the brain. It'll hardwire, and the old idea will start to fall away. And there is a gentleman called Bruce Lipton who has a video out, and maybe a book as well, called The Biology of Belief. You may want to check that out.
Thank you.
One way, Mark, also, is to bring it down to basic psychology 101, mm-hmm. is programming and, teaching behavior and beliefs is basically repetition over time.
Absolutely.
So repetition over time is how we teach infants and children,
mm-hmm.
how to behave, how to think, how to walk, how to do all that sort of stuff. And it's the same thing in psychology. When I'm working with an adult or a child and stuff, it's the same issue. To desensitize a belief or a behavior, it's still repetition over time, and then to replace it, it's repetition over time with something more positive and something more desirable.
You know, sure, I'm glad
the way that affirmations work.
Right.
Like Louise Hay, Sandra Ray, and so much about metaphysics is about using affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I always have this warning about people using affirmations is it's because some people use them in a way of just trying to gloss over the negative behavior or the undesirable behavior or belief by going for the positive affirmation. Well, the positive affirmation is going to bring up a detox of all of the undesirable stuff, and you need to pay attention to it so that you're not just trying to repress it again.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you said that, Stuart. And, you know, the other thing, as you were saying, is, you know, that we all have, and you know this more than I do, that we all have these Pavlovian links, you know, in our minds and our brains. And, you know, when people hear about Pavlov's dog, they think, wow, that's really funny. The dog, you know, salivates when you ring the bell.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what every single human being does as well.
Right.
We have these primitive links. And yes, I agree with you. Denial is one of the diseases, in my opinion, that some of the New Age suffers from.
Right.
We're so busy looking for love and light, mm-hmm. that we've forgotten that we need to look at who we really are,
right.
at our foundation, address that, and then decide what changes we want to make.
Right.
A lot of people are just saying, oh, well, let's just, you know, be happy, and then they go home and kick the dog.
Right. Mark, I want to thank you for calling in, and again, I remind you, stay online so that my engineer, Rob, can get your name and address, and we can get that DVD out to you.
Thank you, John.
And thanks for listening. I hope you're listening in again.
I will.
Okay. Rob, we have another caller?
We do. We have Ann, and we have room for one more caller to give away your DVD.
Okay. Ann, where are you calling from?
From Scottsdale.
Well, welcome. Have you listened to the show before?
I believe that I have on Saturday.
Well, great. What's your question for Mark?
Well, my question is, how do you leave out negative beliefs that other people have and stay focused on my own positive beliefs, because in each area of my life with family and work, there's people that I have goals for what I want to do. And
right.
seems
okay,
like...
I'm gonna answer this question in a very strange way. Now, remember, I'm not a therapist, so you need to know that. I'm a filmmaker, and I've studied this material for a long time. Here's what I would say based on what I've learned. Everybody out there that you think is out there is really you. So what you think of as their negative beliefs is really just a reflection of you. You cannot manifest anything in your life that is not specifically connected to the frequency of who you are. So one of the most important things is it's important to not point our finger at out there and say, well, I have this belief and they're having that belief. They are, in my opinion, reflecting your own thinking. They are mirroring your negative beliefs. You know, if you have a certain, whatever your belief system is in a certain area, and you say, well, these, you know, the people out there think differently, or they disagree, or they kind of take me down, they kind of drag me down, with their vibe.
Family members and
their vibe is you. It's all you.
Yeah. Well, like for example, seems like my boss at my work is overpowering. But the thing that I learned is if I do my job right, and then stay focused on being positive towards him, no matter how he treats me. If I'm always positive, then things go pretty well.
You know, and there's another issue here, I think, also, is that if we're not really conscious and aware and have the tools, we tend to take on, and I know this as a therapist, we tend to take on that negative energy or that abusiveness, and we absorb it into our bodies, and it's what helps program our own self-esteem and belief systems and our reactionary behaviors. So one of the tools that I often suggest to clients, and I've done myself, is that you make a list of the people that you're talking about in your life, and then a list of those negative messages you seem to be getting from them.
Yeah, it's just like from each Mark person said, I get some, but if I focus on
being
positive, then things work out much better. But when I focus on the negative ones, then I can really, like you were talking about earlier, get pretty angry.
But what I'm suggesting is, just like the title of my show is Tell the Truth Faster, if you have a list of those things that you're taking on from them, just like what Mark has just said, then you are more aware of maybe what your own beliefs are, because if you're receiving these things from them, then it may be a projection or just a reflection of your own belief system. It may help you get to the foundation of some of your own negative beliefs and sense of limitations and other things like that. So you might want to try it and see how it takes. So, Anne, I'm going to say to you also, stay on the line, let Rob get your name and phone number, and we'll get that DVD out to you this week.
All right. I just want to say I appreciate what you said earlier about how you can reinforce the new idea. And so that made a lot of sense towards
me. Cool.
Great. And thanks for listening, Anne.
You're welcome. Thank you for your show.
Okay. Rob, we got another one?
We do. We have Terrence from Scottsdale.
Karen?
Yeah, Terrence.
Karen, you there?
Yes.
What's your name?
Terrence.
Karen.
Yes, I wouldn't miss a show. It's a very enjoyable, and a wealth of information is passed on every week.
Thank you. You have a question for Mark?
Can
you speak a little louder?
I don't know if you mentioned the word deprogramming or reprogramming, but if you've been a victim of abuse and it's kind of in your body language,
mm-hmm.
How would you necessarily rid yourself of that? Because I had problems with that when I was younger.
You know, this is a tough one, and Stuart may be better on this one than I am.
Still, there's residuals.
Yeah, you know, I have experienced, you know, abuse as well, and it has played out, you know, throughout my life. And what I have done, and this, you see, I'm going to say this, but I'm going to have Stuart follow up with me because I want this not to be misunderstood. In my spiritual practice that I do, I redesign my past and my history in my mind with incredible tenacity and incredible focus, that there are certain things that may have actually happened in my life that I decide have not, and I recreate my past. And the thing that's dangerous, and that's why I want Stuart to follow up with me, it sounds like denial, but it's not. I just call it re-remembering a different history about myself. Because I know that if I stay this person that has been abused and had this abuse and I try and resolve it in that same mindset, it's very hard to do. So the only way I knew how to do it and made the changes in my life that I've made is by remembering another history, not just by thinking about it, but by, with intense focus, intense will, in my spiritual practice, remembering a different history. Now, it sounds a bit like denial, and to some extent it is. So that's why, let Stuart jump in on this, because this is a very delicate subject.
Well, okay, what I think you're talking about is actually changing your perceptions or reframing a situation. I mean, in clinical terms, we would call it reframing, taking something that we perceive and believe and trying to get another hit. In other words, looking at the perpetrator a little bit differently and, you know, looking at the pain they may have been in, and that's not to say to them, it was okay you did this to me, but to at least get a different level of understanding. If you listen to my show last week, I had Sue Sugar, who's a clinical social worker, on, whose technique is called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, or EMDR. There's another tool that I use also. I use that, and I use another tool called rebirthing, or conscious connected breathing. And these are all things that can actually help, in a sense, detoxify. But EMDR is good because it actually takes the image of the abuse, and through the technique of the eye movement and the procedural set that they use, helps you desensitize the intensity, and it actually affects the cellular memory and the physical holding on to these things. So there are tools out there, Kieran, that can help you very specifically with these types of issues. So I would recommend maybe that you go to my website, tellthetruthfaster.com, and get the information on Sue Sugar, and maybe see if you could do some work with her there locally in the Phoenix area using the EMDR, because it really can
help
you with
what
Mark's talking about. Okay?
All right, thank you, but I didn't mention attraction, but that's a whole other complex subject.
Okay, well, we don't have time for that today, but I thank you for calling, and if you take a moment and hold on the line, Rob will get your address and information so we can get the DVD
out. Okay, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, thank you.
Have a great day.
You know, Stuart, I just wanted to just say one more idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things we talk about in this film is choice, you know. When you start to see how malleable reality is from a scientific perspective, you realize that, you know, sometimes the beginning to the healing that these people are talking about is choosing.
Mm-hmm.
The quantum field will respond
right
to a defined choice that we make. It's not some foo-foo idea.
Mm-hmm.
You can explain it and show it in lab experiments. What's happening in your head, the state that you are in observation, the experiment will respond according to your state of observation, your state of mind, when you're looking at the experiment. It's scientific. People need to remember their choice does marvels in their reality.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that totally. Rob, I'm curious, is there another caller waiting? I know we've gone through the five DVDs.
No, not yet. I just think that people are listening and they found out we gave them away. If you have any more, you probably haven't called in.
I was very pleased that we got those five callers, and that four out of five said that they've listened to the show before. So it's some good feedback for me. So I appreciate all of you who are out there listening that I never hear from. It just is great. Mark, I have another question, actually, based on the film, and actually my own curiosity that came out of it. This film challenges, in a lot of ways, a lot of organized religion.
Mm-hmm.
Even though if you really look at it, it actually supports them in a lot of ways. But what have been the reactions from religious leaders or different organized religions? I would imagine that it's been both good and bad, but I'd be curious as to what kind of reactions you've gotten from it.
For the most part, people have been very encouraged because, you know, we were self-financed in this film. The film was financed by William Arnst, the producer and financier. We weren't beholden to anybody, so we could say pretty much anything we wanted. Generally speaking, people have been very grateful that somebody has addressed some of the iniquities in organized religion, whereby, you know, we are have to supplicate ourselves to some kind of force outside of us. I have found people to be very grateful that they have seen people willing to say these things, and has given them the courage to question things in their life. We have had a few incidences. I know we were picketed once, And on a few radio shows, you know, I've had people call up and be very angry, and you know, and I just say to them, you know what, your position is absolutely valid, and you are creating reality on that basis, so you're right as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody gets to be right.
Right.
But for the most part, you know, yes, certainly some of the Christian press have, you know, made fun of it, and you know, and that's certainly their right and their perspective. But for the most part, I found people very, very encouraged, because they looked at that and thought, you know what, I have the courage now to ask these deep questions, because religion's a tricky thing. There's this thing called blasphemy that's built into certain religions that's designed to not have you ask any questions about the form of the religion that you believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes to a very deep level, you know, a deep reptilian brain level in the human being, where they become afraid to question this God that they're being told, you know, lords over them.
Mm-hmm.
So blasphemy is a tool designed to prevent them from doing that. I, of course, do not believe in blasphemy.
Mm-hmm.
I think God's big enough to handle any opinion I have about God.
Good for you.
You know, God has broad shoulders. If God had broad shoulders, God would have very broad shoulders. God should be way greater than any silly little opinion that I or anybody else have. So I'm not really clear how anybody can offend God. And if you can offend God, I don't think that's a God worth worshiping.
Mm-hmm.
Go and find a God that's unoffendable.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one I want to know about.
Yeah, God that sees all of us on a journey back to that light and back to that higher consciousness, and that there are any things that we do on that journey we may see as mistakes, but it can also be reframed and interpreted as a new challenge to grow and learn and step up to the next level of enlightenment.
Hallelujah, brother.
Yeah, because one of the quotes you had on the website, which I really like, is under the question, "My religion does not adhere to the concepts of this film," it's written, "We direct this film and its concept to everyone's innate ability to decide for themselves what is real and true. Our hope is that people think about their beliefs and paradigms instead of just blindly accepting them. In the end, we decide for ourselves. As Bob Marley said, emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds."
Right.
You know, and to me, it's the same thing as a therapist. You know, where are we enslaved often is to the family belief system.
Right.
And to the family system. And feel like we're being disloyal if we break from the patterns that we've been assigned in that family system.
Right.
And the family very often goes into reaction. I mean, I've seen a lot of people, you know, go into recovery programs and then come out and end up relapsing because the family needs them to be in that position.
Right.
Of using and for them to upset over and everything else. So, you know, one of the systems, whether it's religion, whether it's family, no matter what it is, it's about being willing to look at it honestly and to break from the patterns. And that's really what this film is all about. Think for yourself and be willing to change.
Stuart, I know we only have a few more minutes, but we have a caller online, Lorraine from Phoenix, would like to ask a question.
Okay, Lorraine from Phoenix.
Hi. I'm not sure I understand if to change these neurotransmitters, is it to focus on the new ideas alone?
Correct. If you keep on reinforcing, in other words, whatever the issue is in your life.
Right.
Now, not talking about denial. The first thing you got to look at is, okay, what's not working, and what is it that I want to change? Once you know that, to focus on the new idea and to focus with the same kind of intensity that a child does. Because if you keep on thinking about what your problem is, what you do in the quantum field is you reinforce your problem. Now, it's tricky once again. So once again, I must say this. This is not about denial. First, you got to know what your issue is, what you think it is,
okay,
and what needs to be changed. Once you know it, begin modeling a new idea. Same way that a child models the idea of riding a bicycle, and they keep on doing it, and suddenly one day they're riding the bicycle. You know, they don't keep thinking about falling. They're so impassioned about learning how to get on that bike with those two wheels and ride that they put all of their force of mind and focus into it. That's what I'm talking about. Focus on the idea of what it is that you want to become, not hopefully, but become. Because if you keep on saying, wake up every morning and say, oh, I still have this problem, that's your day. Your day still has that problem. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's much clearer.
Great. Lorraine, I'm going to ask you to do something. I'm going to ask you to give your name and address and information to my engineer, Rob, and if I can get a 6-CD DVD, I'll send you one also, okay?
Oh, thank you.
So, I'm not promising, but if I can get a 6-1, I'm going to get one out to you also. So give him your name, address, and information, okay?
Okay,
and thanks for calling.
Thanks, Lorraine. You know, conversation about religion for a moment. I know we're about to close the show. One of the greatest questions I think that everybody needs to ask themselves, you know, not that I want to dissuade anybody from their religion, but if your religion or your system of thought or your model of reality is broad enough to include all ideas and all people, I think you have something wonderful. If it's not broad enough to include everything, I think we need to look at our model that we have and say, you know what, it should be broad enough to encompass all things, because surely if God is broad enough to incorporate all things, my religion should be broad enough as well.
Oh, beautifully put. I so believe that. You know, because another quote from your website was from Albert Einstein, science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind.
Right, right.
And to be able to be all-inclusive, you know, to be able to take in these scientific paradigms and facts and integrate it with a spiritual and metaphysical belief is understanding that it's all one, it's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different ways of looking at the same process that all of us and the same path that all of us are on.
Right, beautiful. You know, Stuart, just one more thing before we close. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people have questions and follow-up questions about, you know, how do we put these things into our life. You know, people should go and look at our website,
mm-hmm.
and we will, over the next months, be putting out more material and a bit more about how to do these certain things. The website is www.whatthebleep.com, mm-hmm. and if they keep on checking it out and keep on going there, they'll get more information, because I know a lot of people want to say, okay, great, now how specifically do I do that thing? Mm-hmm. So just have them stay tuned.
Well, I want to thank you so much. I know you're at a weekend retreat right now and that you took the time out, and I know that your voice has been going for the last week, and I totally value this show and your time on it, and hopefully we can do it again, because well, there's just so much material, and I love your processing and your thinking.
Thank you, Stuart. I love your show, and thank you so much for making the time for me to come talk to you as well.
Well, thank you. And I also want to remind my listeners that if you want to hear this show again, in about a week and a half, it'll be up on the archives free of charge. You can go. You can suggest other people go there to listen to Mark and our conversation and the callers. It's tellthetruthfaster.com. And every show I've done over the last 3 years is archived on there. And there are a lot of different topics and things that you can get to. So in closing, there is a quote I also want to read from Dr. Martin Luther King. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Hate multiplies hate. Violence multiplies violence. And toughness multiplies toughness in a descending spiral of destruction. The chain reaction of evil must be broken, or we shall be plunged into the dark abyss of annihilation. So with that being said, I really, again, Mark, I want to thank you for taking the time. It's been an amazing show, one of my favorites in the 3 years, and I really value it. And I'm glad that the callers called in, and we'll get those DVDs out to you. Listen in next week and every week on KXAM 1310 in Phoenix at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. So
national and local.